Good evening. I actually got a call this afternoon from the exponent asking me if I could comment on an article about Chodesh Elul, that what should in the non-Orthodox world, they don't need. He found the month of Elul isn't really observed. So, do I have any recommendations for the month of Elul? So, really, big recommendation is Talmud Torah. You know, learn, and not just Musar and things, that there's a place for that, but even just focusing on Halacha and Maisa, what can we do for improvement, things like that. So, this is certainly a good preparation. In the month of Elul for Rosh Hashanah, which is not so far away. It's coming up. Okay, so my task tonight is lemaisa things having to do with ovens. That's what I hear, right? Okay, so you learned Tzadi Beis already, right?
We did.
Okay, so Kufches and Tzadi Beis, the difference between Recha versus Zeya, right? So here, Kufches, we get introduced, we all of a sudden start learning about this oven business. There's Recha, that the certain foods give off Recha to other things in the oven, and we have to be choshish for that, etc. And you say, wait a second, I heard a lot of this before, right? And you go and check back your notes all the way back to Tzadi Beis, and there's a very similar sugya having to do with Zeya. Now, I'm not really sure what the difference is. I mean, I hear, there are different terms, and truth is, in the Gemara itself, they seem to be discussing different things. So there is, first of all, there's two Recha Sugyas. Did you come across that? There's a, yeah. You covered that. There's the Recha Sugya in Maseches Pesachim about two Korban Pesachs. That seems to be the focus of the Sugya here when you learn this, that there are two Korban Pesachs that are in the same oven, that we're concerned that they're going to absorb one for the other, and that's one Recha. We call that, the Gemara calls that a problem of Recha. And the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah talks about like smelling these wines and things like that. There's some kind of mechanism that uses to smell wine, and the concern that might cause the wine to become stam yenam, so that's another form of reicha. So Chilkas Rashi and Tosos, Rashi says, well, they're the same thing. And in Avodah Zarah, we paskin like Rava over Abaye, and therefore reicha la vilsa. And therefore, here in the sugya in Pesachim, discussing Korban Pesach, we're also going to say Recha Lav Milsa, and therefore you can like close the sim, and there's nothing really to talk about. Plus, Recha isn't a real thing, anyways. The truth is, in the post-COVID world, for many of us, Recha really isn't a real thing. It hasn't been a real thing for several years already now. But if we go to Tzadi Beis, you still have this concern about Zeya. Now, do you define a difference between the two? I'm not really sure.
So my question was like when you learn Sim Kaches, if you wouldn't learn Tzadi Beis, you would think that Avin's totally fine.
Yeah.
like you almost like forget about like Zeya. Like you don't know.
Right. Right. So I think the only thing that I could really come up with as a nafkami between the two is that in the Zeya, that in the Zeya department, if there's no Zeya, there's no Zeya. Right, while Recha potentially still exists. I think that would be the difference, a potential to be more macher. Now, that's where Recha potentially would be more macher. Now, we really don't pass in that way, right? Because we just look in things and say, look, we don't know whether Zeya is there or not there, etc. I mean, those are going to be mach, the oven machmirim are going to say, we don't really know what Zeya is. And therefore, because we don't know what the Zeya is, therefore we've got to be machmir that everything's going to have Zeya, and therefore we're always going to have to keep everything separate, or if you're going to go from milchiks to fleishiks, etc., you're going to have to kasher, and things like that. So therefore, because of that chumrah, so it ends up being that nothing is, there's not going to be a chumrah in Recha that is not going to exist in Zeya. So you're not going to have any chumras in Kufches that you're not going to already have in Tzadi Beis. But I think if you come in the other direction, if you're going to be, hopefully he doesn't have an oven, Shiloh, and if you're going to be on the Zeya Mekel side, so then perhaps there's a little bit more reason to be machmir for Recha than Zeya. I think if you have two things in the same oven, things like that, which like we wouldn't really be doing anyways. So at the end, and Lamaisa, we're Mekel B'dieved in all these cases also. So that being the case, It ends up really just being a chazara of Tzadi Beis, because I think you just go, that's my read. I didn't have a chance to do like a full a deep dive today, but I remember being frustrated by the same question when I learned the Yerdeya already now 20 years ago, and when I go reviewing it again, I remember being frustrated and continuing to be somewhat frustrated by that. So that's what I think is comes out with regard to those two issues. Now, the one another ha'ara here in Kaf Ches is that the Mechaber, when he lists this off, he ends up being Mekel. He ends up saying, yeah, we don't really have to be concerned. As long as they don't touch each other, even at the same time. If one of them is covered up, or there's like dough on it or something like that, even if it's a small oven and it's a small opening. So the Mechaber ends up being more Mekel on this, but... But he starts off by saying that if one thing is usser, one thing is mutter, so then it's a problem, right? So what is that problem? Meaning if he ends up being makel straight up the rest of the way, so if you're going to be makel with basar v'chalav, so that means that you really hold the reichalav milsa. So if you're going to hold the reichalav milsa, that there's really no such thing as this reyach, so then what is the point of the chumrah? Why are we machmer in the first place? Why, if the yisod is that we don't really have to be choshish for this, so then why are we going to be machmer with the tzolin in the first part of the sif? That was one ha'ar. So the Prima Gadim suggests on that, this goes back to the first kabur we gave, he says, no, it's a problem of ein mevatel nisro chatila. He says, yeah, you have the right to be makel, because you're not going to have, you're really, lemaisa, not going to, we really assume that there's no recha, but even if there is a small amount, even recha lav milsa might really just mean recha lav milsa he lemaisa, right? That there's really no such thing as recha in a practical sense. But, you know, why is that? Because anytime that you're going to have an issue of recha, anytime you're going to have this issue of a smell, a transfer from one to the other, you're going to end up being makel because you're going to end up being mevatelet. So once you're heading into the bittel class, once you're in the bittel area, so then you run into an issue of ein mevatel nisro chachila. You shouldn't go and be mevatel things unless you have to, and therefore one would be. Therefore, ideally, the mechaber says to be machmer. So therefore, the whole thing is really operating on a level of derabanan. So, on a level of bidyev, meaning any discussion that you have here is then going to be, well, okay, bidyev. He ended up putting things together. So how then are we going to deal with that? There is a right. So this then enters into the whole question. Truth is, the Ramah. This Ramah is a good place to focus on this issue of, well, what do we consider l'chachila and bidyeved when it comes to a lot of these halachos? Meaning bidyeved, same thing like in Hilchos Mezuzah. So sometimes in Hilchos Mezuzah, so you'll come back. Well, the letter is kasher bidyeved. Okay, what does that mean? Right? Bidyeved, I can think of five different things that could mean, right? Bidyeved, you wrote it that way, the sofer doesn't have to fix it. Bidyeved, you wrote it like that, the sofer can sell it to somebody else and not tell them about it. Bidyeved, if you bought it already, you don't have to buy a new one, right? Bidyeved, you could keep it up, but, you know, you really should buy a new one, right? And sometimes bidyeved, you can keep it. But can you make a bracha on it? Right? So sometimes the Mishnah Berurah enunciates a difference. Sometimes he just says bidyeved. So the same thing comes up when it comes to these types of things. Bidyeved. So bidyeved for who? Bidyeved for what? Bidyeved for if you're in a commercial situation where we're going to say, well, it's kasher bidyeved, right? B'shas Chak is kasher bidyeved or something like that. So who gets to say that it's bidyeved? The owner of the store? Right? He says, well, bidyeved, it's kosher, so now I could go and sell it. Yeah, it's bidyeved for him, but it's not necessarily bidyeved for the buyer.
Isn't there a word that the kniya is buying is the bidyeved?
Buying it is...
A bidyeved situation, if you need it.
If you need it, you can go and buy it. Right, yeah. Right. But what does that mean, I need it? Meaning I need it as opposed to what? I mean, it's not going to be available otherwise? Right, I think. Did you speak last time about the
schnitzels on Pesach?
The chicken, right? Yeah. We spoke about that at some point, right? That they discovered that they were using kitnios oil with the chicken. So technically speaking, it's mutter b'di'evit, right? So again, b'di'evit for who? B'di'evit for him, or for him to sell, or b'di'evit for the person to buy, right? So that's an issue here. So here in this Ramah, so he says im afa pas im basar, right? If you did the bread with the basar, asr la'achlu im chalav. You're not allowed to eat it with chalav. Im yesh lo pas acher. If you have other bread, so what are we saying? We're saying the bread is fleishik's l'chadchila, or something like that, right? He said, if you have other bread. So too, if they made it with something that wasn't kosher. Also, you shouldn't buy pas im yesh pas acher, if you have other bread. But if you, right, but if you don't, so then you, sounds like you could go and buy it. What does it mean you don't have, who's controlling whether that's, whether there is or whether there isn't, or how b'dievet it needs to be?
Husband and wife. How much you need it?
How much you need it,
yeah.
Right? Meaning, because the husband is hungry and the wife is machmir. Yeah. Also, the wife is machmir because how could you possibly bring this into my kitchen? And the husband's like, but the evid, it's okay, right? So you don't have to feel bad, right? So that is also a controversy that comes up from here. Not sure, right? Also, it's also a good example of a davar sheyesh lo matirin, right? That's also invoked here by the Rama. It says, why is it that you shouldn't use it? Because it's davar sheyesh lo matirin. Because it could potentially be mutter. Why is it going to potentially be mutter? Well, you could eat it plain. You don't have to eat it. You don't have to eat the bread with cream cheese. You could eat it plain without the cream cheese. So that is what he that's what he says here. There is, I'll give one case of a place that shall remain nameless, but there is a place not really in the Philadelphia area that has sort of a separate Jewish community that did ask us to be involved with their hechsherim or to sort of oversee their hechsherim. And one of the issues was that it was a sort of like giant here, you know, but like that kind of place, meaning a supermarket with a commercial bakery in it, and they wanted us to certify the commercial bakery, but the only problem was that the commercial bakery only had one oven, right? So would we be so much on that? So I'll tell you full disclosure, there's only one oven in my house, right? that we use. We don't have two. But what would we do in that situation?
What was being cooked in that oven?
So there the issue is, right, they're not cooking any meat there. It's parv and dairy, right? So the question is, could we certify, but one of the things that they're going to be making are challahs, right? So would you buy a challah for your Shabbos meal that says on it, DE, right? So that's going to be a problem. So we'd have to figure out a way to kosher it, right? Right. So that was a big issue. Now,
it wouldn't be a challah called Israel, would it?
What depends? Depends who. Depends who's asking the Shaila. Okay. Probably here it would be. Meaning here I doubt that they would be comfortable with that because there's stam chal of stam being used in that oven, okay. Right? So here the Rama would say, well, b'dievet, it's okay. And that is a community. It's not so close to other places. And if a person wants chal there, there's no real other options to be able to get it. So it sounds like that would be b'dievet be okay. So as a kashrus agency, what do we do, right? Do we say, well, you know, our standards are X. We only sell things that are 100% fully parv. And then but you say, well, l'halacha, in a community where they don't have other choice, really it's mutter to eat. So could we certify that, right, as being parv? Because, well, b'dievet, that's the situation there.
Wouldn't it be better to, like, certify it because then you avoid them? If they don't know what they're doing, like, and you don't give a hechsher, maybe they'll be giving food actually is problematic.
Maybe meaning it'll make it worse.
Make it worse.
Right. So that's a very, so we get into that, that's a discussion that has come up with, well, one second, let me just enunciate the question, we'll deal with that, we'll talk about that issue a little bit. But the, right, so potentially in that community, you could, you know, the rav of that community, right, could say, no, like this is what's needed for our community, and therefore that falls into this rule of the Rama, and therefore we're willing to give a parv hechsher on it, even though one can make a case that one really shouldn't. I mean, the truth is, I mean, that case is better than this case. That this case is talking about mamish in the same oven at the same time. That's not going to be the same oven at the same time. Okay, but nevertheless, you're still in that like that mode. Now, the consideration of, we better do this, otherwise it's going to be worse. Meaning, you know, this is something we play around with a lot. If we don't take a certain hechsher, so then someone else is going to come in who's not reliable. And they'll give a hechsher, and then that causes problems, you know, within the community. So I think it's dangerous to go down that road. Meaning if you're in that, it's not really our responsibility. You know, our responsibility is to make sure that there is kosher food, adequate kosher food for our community. That's what I see as our minimum responsibility. But to ensure that there's every possible type of thing, I think you go into a dangerous place when you start thinking like, well, we better have, you know, frozen par, so whatever, because otherwise, you know, people are going to get, you know, there is some amount of responsibility that we need to put on the consumer to be able to say, okay, this is something that we'll get, and that's something, you know, even though I might want it, I'm not going to go and get it. Okay, so when it comes to, so when you go through the halachas farms, and we talk about ovens, so just in our home ovens, so what is, the ideal is to really have two ovens, one for milchiks, one for fleishiks, right? What is the case to be made? What is the issue? If you're going to say, no, we're always going to use two ovens. So what are you choshesh for? So we mentioned it before. We're choshesh for the issue of zaya. Now, what is the issue of zaya, right? What is that concern, right? The concern is that you're going to have steam that's going to come out of food A, of your pot roast. It's going to go into the wall, right? And then it's going to come out of the wall, and when you put in your lasagna, and it's going to go into the lasagna. Right, the cheese lasagna. Right, that is the zaya concern. Now, is that really a zaya concern? Is that really going to be considered to be a problem? So, at the very least, right, you are saved by that is not bar not. Right, that at the very least, that's going to be mutter b'dieved because the it's going to go whatever goes into the wall and then comes out of the wall. So that's you're already at a no Saint Tom thing, and that b'dieved we're going to say is going to be okay, right? That is
but you're causing the napanat.
So Ashkenazim are machmir on the right. So that situation, are you allowed to go ahead and do that and create that? So Ashkenazim generally are machmir on that. So then what? So therefore we say, okay, well then you got to do two ovens, or you got to figure out another way. You're going to be pogame, you're going to burn out, you're going to kasher, you're going to do these kinds of things. I remember when I was in seventh grade, our Rebbe started giving us this whole story about using ovens for milchiks and fleishiks that you have to go and kasher between. And I think 80% of the class is like, what in the world is he talking about? we have one oven at house. Like, you know, we're like, you know, we're 12 years old. Like, what am I supposed to eat for dinner tonight exactly? Like, what is the... So that is the... So that is the sort of the machmer view. I mean, we are concerned of glios going one for the other. I will mention one thing, especially when you get into to this area. Like, if the issue is tam, what exactly are we concerned about here, right? Like you're really going to taste the difference, whether there's a little bit of taste in this. So in Parsha, we may have mentioned this the previous time, but the in Parsha's Matos, where it talks about kashering, right? That's in Matos.
Like Clay Midian?
What?
Like Clay Midian?
Yeah, Clay Midian is Matos, right? Not Matos. Right. I think it's yeah. Where it discusses that issue, so there's a couple of psukim that is devoted to kashering process, potentially also to tefillah process. That's machlokas, whether that's what's being referred to there. But it describes the kashering process as zos chukas haTorah, right? That this is one of the chukim of the Torah. So even though we try to get into, we try to sort of put in our heads that the physics of that there's metal and there are pores and the pores open up and they get filled and then they get closed and open up again, come out, etc. Right? We don't have to follow that. I mean, the Torah is going to have its own physics world as opposed to the way that the physics seem to work in the world that we're looking at. Right? So even though if you look at it, well, I don't taste the difference. I'm not like it's really going to be a difference whether it's 300 degrees or whether it's 800 degrees. Like what? Who really cares? It's not. Nothing's really going to etc. So I think I've sort of gotten past that by saying, look, it's not about whether you taste it or not. It's a question of whether you fulfilled what the Torah said you need to do. Right? The Torah says you need to do libum. The Torah says you need to do hagala. Whatever the Torah says you need to do, that's what you need to do, regardless of whether it actually matches up with the physics, with the way the physics seem to work in the world. Right? Like there is in a different realm of halacha. So we have on Shabbos, you have kli rishon, kli sheni, kli shishi. Right? That discussion. So the story is told. A waiter is walking and he accidentally spills. He's walking around with the tea to distribute the tea on Shabbos, and he accidentally trips, and the tea that he's holding, the swass or whatever it is to fill things up, trips and he falls, and the water spills on somebody's leg. He says, "Oh my gosh, you must be so hurt." He says, "No, it's okay. It was a kli shlishi. I'm okay. everything is fine." Right? So we don't. So it doesn't necessarily have to the Torah and halachos doesn't necessarily have to correspond with physics and temperature. Right? We have halachos that dictate how we live. I think regardless of the physics, I think that helps resolve a lot of these issues. I mean, we have instructions to do the halacha, right? And don't tell me, oh well, does it really matter whether I get the blowtorch to that far corner? It's like, well, yes, but if we're going to say it's libun gamor, that's libun gamor. That's what the Torah is telling you to do, regardless of whether there's any tam that's actually going to be burnt up there. So what then is the excuse, or what then is the kula potentially to say that you're going to use one oven? So there's a couple of things hanging out there that come together to be mekel. So again, first of all, at worst, it's not barnat, and therefore it's going to be mutar b'diavad. Okay, the next level is, that Shulchan Aruch discusses, if there is holes in the oven, like if there is vents there. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he discusses these vents. He says, look, we don't really know, probably our vents might not be big enough, right? We're not really sure, but okay, they are there. And then there's the other world of, well, this concern is only about Zaya, and our ovens are different. Why are ovens different? I remember when I was in Smicha, I was like, why would our ovens be like, what does that mean that the ovens are different? And the description is that, I think Rav Schechter described this, when you open up back in the old days, when you opened up an oven, so like all this smoke and steam would come out. And nowadays, that's not what happens. Nowadays, you open up an oven and you see what's inside. Hopefully, right? There's a lot of steam and smoke coming out. That means you got a problem, right? But normally, you're not going to see that. So what changed? What's the big difference between the old ovens versus the new ovens? So I think the main difference is where the fire is. It used to be in the old days, the fire was in the oven, right? And that was what was creating the steam. Now, and you're also burning the oven. The fire actually was burning things. Nowadays, it's burning gas. Or electricity, whatever. Yeah, it's only electricity. It's only gas. And therefore, it's not, plus there's nothing actually being burnt by the fire. That perhaps is the cause that's also going to diminish the steam. Meaning the steam is not just coming from the food. The steam is being created because you have a compartment of steam, right? And that perhaps is what's going to be drawing things out of the food. So in the absence of that, so therefore one perhaps has the right to be to make it as well. So you put those together, a lack of steam, a lack of a possibility of ventilation. So that is what the oven mekilim are relying on.
So just to clarify, so the fact that the fire is not directly in the body of the oven itself,
right?
How does that help?
I think it's not a halachic help; it's a metzias help. Meaning the fact that it's not in the body, so that just creates less steam. Meaning if you've ever gone, right, if you've been to a matzah baking factory where they're using logs and coal and stuff, mm-hmm. So they're dumping that's all going in the oven itself, and therefore creating a lot of smoke in the oven itself.
Gotcha.
Nowadays, the
matzias
don't seem to
carry the matzias of
right. The would carry around the zeya as well. Right. That is that is what the mekilim will claim on this. Okay.
Then you said the second aspect was modern day ventilation.
Right.
It's not like from what you were saying that Rav Moshe's tshuva is sort of preempting a problem you might have, which it seems like maybe there's less ventilation than in the older ovens?
Well, he's concerned that he's saying you can't rely solely on the fact that there's ventilation. Rav Moshe there's the machmirim, then there is Rav Moshe is somewhat in the middle, and then there is the more mekel ones. The machmirim are the ones who say that you need to pick a flavor and stick with the flavor, meaning milk or meat, and everything else that goes in needs to be covered. I believe Rav Moshe says that, no, you only have to cover it if there is liquid, meaning if it is like a liquidy thing. If it's not a liquidy thing, so then it could go back. I think that's what Rav Moshe says. Now, the problem is,
How do you define that, right?
So that's right. The problem. How do you define that?
I once asked Roy Reisman.
Yeah?
He told me, like, if you're putting challah, no problem. But my question was, even though the challah has no steam, if you cook chicken right before and the steam went to the oven, why wouldn't the zeya come up from the walls and go into your challah?
Because I think we only assume zeya could come from mamashos.
But it wasn't mashes before.
No. I think the steam is then going to go into goes into the wall and creates the. It is blios. Right? If assuming everything is just blios and just things that are absorbed, so ein blios yotze ela yidei rotev. Right? So the steam creates the rotev, so which the color, is then able for it to come out.
It's not going to take out from the fleshic oven. No,
that's what he would say. Good. So Baruch Shekivati, right? Okay, good. So he holds challah is dry enough. Uh-huh. Okay. So who does that? That is actually a makor for. This is a makor for that. The fact that they're willing to say that pas perhaps is not an issue, even if only b'dieved, but is not an issue if cooked with meat. That's based on the fact that pas is assumed to not have any zeyah or any roti or things like that.
That was
like
the sign. You're saying zeh chazer.
He was saying Zachar Zeh. Right, so Zachar Zeh would say it's mutter. I'm just saying that this is a makor for the fact that there we don't assume bread has.
Doesn't the Ramah next page say Zachar Zeh is fine?
But except that the here in Recha, but not in
Zeh.
In Zeh, he's the Ramah ends up at the end, I think, saying.
But even Zachar Zeh.
Like the Tachila, you should be. You know, like, okay. Just there. Okay.
But the Machmir would say that the challah, even the challah, you can't put in.
No. Challah, we might say, is kuli amal. That might be what Rav Reisen was telling you. Kuli amal upligi, that challah, you don't have to be choshesh for Zeh coming out.
Gotcha.
I think that.
You were saying it's because the mitzias of challah is that doesn't create Zeh?
Yeah, and I think you have a core for that, which I'll get to. That was actually on the list. It's okay. Two things down the list. Okay, so that is. Right, so because we're only concerned with. We're not really concerned if there's no blia. I mean, we're only the zeya only. If they're blios, if there are only things in the wall, so then you need zeya to possibly create a problem, right? In the absence of any zeya, so then one would have the right to be makel. So if you can, whatever, if you're putting in a food that you could say, I don't think this is so, you know, that is dry and not moist, however you define that, right? So as long as the oven is clean, you're not going to have. It's not going to have an issue. So if you're a one oven person, that's really what you need to be somechan. You have to be somechan. If something is moist and you're putting it in, so then it should be covered. If it's dry, so then you don't have to cover it, provided that the oven is clean. That is what we're trying to accomplish. I think that is the rule.
And that's the foods are one after the other.
Yes, right. No, putting things in at the same time is a problem. Truth is, if it's in at the same time, it could very well be that it makes you fleishig. I mean, if you're going to have chicken and potatoes, so this actually solved a big problem in our house. But if you have chicken and potatoes in at the same time, so then, especially chicken, is something that would cause zeya. Potentially, that would make the potatoes actually fleishig. So, which was a big help on Erev Shabbos. Plus, my wife would make these potatoes and put it on the counter, and by the time you got to Shabbos, 3/4 of it was gone. So I said, hey, wait a second, it makes you fleishig. So there, because that creates all those all the fleishig phobes around. I was like, oy vey, I won't be able to have my ice cream in 20 minutes before Shabbos or whatever. So that somehow was able to keep a little bit of a gedder around the potatoes and Erev Shabbos.
When you say it needs to be clean, you're talking about like a more basic, visible level clean. You're talking about like when we self-clean an oven.
Not self-cleaning. Right. No, self-cleaning is kosher. Right? I think it just means you have to make sure that there can't be mamashos in there. Now, where does you know, discoloration begin and mamashos end? That's not something that you're really going to think. So I think you have the right, like if something is pretty burnt to the wall, for this halacha, you're going to say there's no zeah coming out of that, right? It's only, it also came up with the idea that, well, so what are the things that really are liquidy? So probably you would say, like if you put in a lasagna or a baked ziti or something where you actually pour in a lot of sauce, so that you would make a strong case is a pretty liquidy type of thing. But so often, if you cover it first, by time, then you can if you cover it the whole time, so then suddenly it comes out mushy. So if you cover it first and then you take it off halfway through, so then that could potentially give a time for it to dry up. At least you can say, I'm here about, I'm putting it covered so that it dries up, and then you can take it off halfway in. If it's a Fleishik's oven, so then if you cover the lasagna in the beginning, and then you take off the cover in the middle, so by that time, assume that the liquid has dried up to some point. Now, do you know that that's really the point that Chazal meant? I don't know, but I think we're doing the best we can under the circumstances with one oven. I think that is the mahalach that I've instructed over the years.
Would you say pizza's liquidy or?
I would go with that it's not. Meaning it's a hint when making pizza at home is to use less sauce. Often if there's more sauce, that's when it becomes like.
Definitely, Sean pizza's definitely like dry out. Like,
right, a lack of sauce. Yeah. So the less sauce, the better with a lot of things. That's it, because otherwise it causes like it becomes a little soggy. Mm-hmm. So
comes out of the cheese, doesn't come
through. Yeah. So I think in order for this to work, one could come and say, no, we're going to be machmor on that. I would certainly hear that. The mekilim, leave it to according to those that say that you could get by with one oven, that you would say that no, it's not. That it's not. And truth is, there's a makor for that. And Hilchos Shabbos also, we have a makor for that. Yish bishal achar bishal b'davar lach. Right? You're not allowed to take liquid and return it on Shabbos, even if it's on a blech, even if it's low. Even if you get around to the other problems, if you're going to be heating up liquid, that's going to be a problem. So where does liquid end and solid begin? Right. So can you take like the chicken that congealed the night before and put it on the fire such that it's now going to turn all liquidy? So that we assume no. So the general, I think, the approach of the Keystone K and whatever the policy is that it can't be sitting in liquid, but if you take the chicken out and put it on something else, so then that's okay. There's going to be some gravy on it that's going to melt and it's going to become liquidy. I think that we're.
So does the Keystone K certify one oven situation?
No, so we would not. That we would.
Are you talking about for somebody at home?
Yeah, so for someone at home. Sorry, for gotcha. Shifting but back and forth.
For a commercial certification.
Commercial certification, we would not allow it without a real koshering process going on between.
Are a lot of these like chumras predicated on this idea that it is reasonable to expect someone to have two ovens, but maybe in a time where it was less reasonable, we maybe would be even more makel?
So it's a little hard to say because the whole idea of people having an oven in their home is only 100 years old, right? My grandmother remembers the chulent guy walking around on Shabbos bringing everybody's chulent to their houses, right? The idea of having a real oven in your house was not the... In fact, I saw someplace recently that behind the Gra Shul in Shari Chesed, like you could still see the oven that was there, like the communal oven that everybody used. And the person, it was Rabbi Kenny Brander, one of his, he had like a sort of a thing. So he said, like, imagine that. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach put his chulent in the same oven for all of Shabbos as, the schlepper who, et cetera, meaning the idea of Achdus and everybody was able to get along, et cetera. So the idea of having your own oven in your own house was a problem. Now, what they do, there are some kulas actually with there that it is discussed because they used to, like, even for Pesach, this was discussed, because I think they had to rent a bakery oven or something in order to make matzahs and they weren't able to get it for 24 hours. I think that is discussed. I just don't have any, davar sheyesh bo mamish to give you right now. But that is a question. How far do you go to tell somebody to be machmir and get two ovens? I mean, that's an expense. It's not a small expense. It's a pretty decent expense, especially if you don't have a large kitchen, things like that.
So, space is probably a bigger problem.
Right. So some would say, space, you grew up in a two-bedroom apartment with eight kids, what do you mean? But on the other hand, it's... Have to be real about what we're used to bizman hazeh.
Who are the machmirim? Who are the mekilim?
So the badi hashulchan is the machmir, the machmir.
He usually is machmir.
Yeah. So he is full fledged. you need to double wrap anything that goes in of the other flavor, if you don't have, or use an insert, which
the
Badi HaShulchan, or Fivel Cohn. Yeah.
We haven't looked at it yet.
Okay, so
I can show it to you.
Yes, he was Nifter last year, 2 years ago.
So, but
his son is the here.
Son, yeah.
This is his son. The Chalkas Binyamin is his son. So he's copying. It's sort of like a Mishnah Berurah on Yerideya. He was smart enough to not call it the Mishnah Berurah on Yerideya, otherwise he probably would have gotten banned until whatever. But he pretty much made a Mishnah Berurah and a Be'er Halacha on sections of Yerideya, and his son Rav Binyamin Cohn has taken over that.
If Chaim Knessi made a Mishnah
Berurah style, yes. Yes, right. Which is amazing. Have you ever the Derech Emunah is like
I went with Hilchos Lakha. I went through it.
Right. Vasetz and Zroyim.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. So the last couple of years was Shemitah Hilchos Lakha is there and Hilchos Orla is there, which I've taught in the Monday night shir. So it's incredible. I don't understand. I can't understand how he wrote that. I just can't. It's a kind of safer where you need 300 svarim open in front of you at the same time. None of the pictures of Rav Chaim Kanievsky have more than one safer open in front of him at one time. So I don't understand it.
It's also it's written in a lot of his svarim are written very humble. You don't see
yes.
It's earnest. It's just written to the teacher.
Yeah. So I was when I. Yeah, got to use the Derech Emunah.
It's on Hebrew books, I think.
Yes, yeah. Yes, mostly in Hebrew books. Or Otsar Chachma has a little bit of a better point. Yeah.
Okay. So, I'm sorry, one thing I was trying to understand when we were going over the sugya was sort of what distinguishes our ovens from these older ovens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've seen older ovens, but I don't necessarily have a lot of personal experience. And one question I had was, when we talk about an oven that's large versus small, when we talk about an oven that's open versus closed,
right?
It sounded like Ramosha was assuming our ovens are actually closed and maybe there's a little ventilation,
right?
So really these older ovens are open.
He would say it was more right. Would okay. be open. I think.
Also, they wanted to know what's the share. How big is your base this winter?
Oh, I think it is. It is larger than our home oven. I'm not sure, but I did actually notice today someplace I was looking around. He said it's larger than our oven.
Okay. This is why you would have machmirim because they would say none of our ovens are really meet these criteria.
Right, right. No, we're hoping to redo our kitchen at some point. We will put into the plan is to put into ovens, but we moved into a house that was owned by from people before us, and that's actually they had their oven was side by side. They had a double oven side by side. Only just one of the sides stopped working. The doors didn't work, but it's from the 70s. Whatever. Anyways. Okay. So let's we'll talk about Liebman Gummers, Liebman Kalitz. Okay. Microwaves. I don't know if we discussed microwaves at all. Microwaves have there's a chumra and a kula when it comes to microwaves. The chumra is that there is a lot of steam. Meaning that is how microwaves work. Microwaves get into they heat up the moisture inside the food, and that's and the moisture gets all excited, and that's what heats everything else up. So there is more zeya. The better part about microwaves is that the walls do not become hot. The walls remain cold. At least that's the way they're supposed to work, is that the walls are supposed to remain cold. So so therefore one has a strong grounds to say that, yeah, there might be Zeya in it, but there really is nothing going into there's nothing coming out of the walls. I mean, the walls itself has to be hot in order to get a blia out of it or into it. And if the walls aren't getting hot, so then there's no blias that are going to work here. So that's the case to be made that you only need one microwave. Now, in practice, don't recommend that. In practice, I think it's a little bit more problematic than that because that's in microwaves in a in a pristine environment where everybody is very careful, but in all of our houses, right, where there are children that use the microwaves, right, so it does not work out that way, right? Things splatter, things get all over the place. So if you're going to be very machmir and clean everything up after each time, so then you got, then okay, fine, then there's one to be so mechan. But if you are going to, uh, but, But usually, you know, there's a tomato sauce splashed in one corner from the baked ziti, and then there's gravy from the meat in another corner. Right, so they have a problem. So so one way is to cover up one of them. The Rama, I was always like uncomfortable with that. Was the Rama is uncomfortable with covering? The Rama kind of like, yeah, cover, but you know, that's only it's not ideal to use coverings. So I think when we for a while we had one microwave and we covered up and we covered. Which I don't remember which one, and I think at some point I saw one of my kids sticking something into the microwave at some point, like he was old enough to be able to put it on, like, forget it, I went through my stuff, I found my dorm room microwave from, you know, 15 years earlier, and like, brought it up, like, we're now doing plashiks, milchiks, and keep them separate.
I was in a yeshiva in Australia, and there was a sign in the microwave, that this microwave is only for... It's for bishus roll and chalav roll. If you don't know what those terms mean, don't use it.
Okay.
Air fryers.
What?
Air fryers.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I've someone asked me recently about air fryers. Looked into it a little bit. I don't get it. Yeah.
I once saw someone put something in a grill. Someone put something like fleishich in the microwave, and this woman who was like came to like she was like she wasn't in the curl, but she was like one of the she was like the you know the administrator of the curl. She came down, she just put some water, turned the thing, and then 10 minutes later I was like, okay, it's kasher now.
Like, right. So that's what they say, the kashering process of it, assuming it's clean, but is you just create, the kashering process is really just a chashash, what's the concern? So the chashash is easy go, so you boil some water for a while, and then that will fill the whole thing with steam, so that should, in theory, kasher the entire thing.
It sounds like you were saying maybe even that might not be required, that maybe just cleaning it out would be sufficient, because there's no bleah.
Right. You can make that case, yeah.
So, like an obvious, a classic problem is either when you're working in an office,
right,
and you want a hot lunch or something, or you're traveling or whatever. Like if you visit family or something that don't have a kosher microwave, there. I mean, here we're talking about. We've been thus far kind of talking about things that are kosher milchiks, kosher fleishiks, right? So, the worst case would be like a not bar not type thing, I guess.
Right.
So when you're dealing with possible, like,
it's
real
Yisurabala. Yeah.
Is the issue with microwaves kind of the same thing? Because there's the Zaya, the walls are still cold, or?
Yeah, so the Pesach guides, I mean, we assume at least L'chumra, we try to be machmir and not pretend, that's not the right term, but to view chametz on Pesach as being Yisurabala. I mean, there's a difference between a terabala, right? Milchiks and fleishiks are both mutter, as opposed to something that is usser, potentially becoming mutter, or mixing something that is usher with mutter, which are going to be more machmir and have a higher standard for kashering. So for Pesach, I remember when we learned the sugya, or Sobolowski was like, just put the microwaves away for Pesach. the whole thing is, you know, only 4 days of Chol Hamoed anyways, and you know, one day is Shabbos, and one day you're schlepping to a great adventure, and the other day is Erev Shabbos, right? Just put it away. It's not that important over the course. But technically, they do say that you could do this for Pesach.
Do this.
Do the kashering with the water.
I think more common is like my wife works at the hospital, yeah, where she has the microwave there, or
right,
if we visit our family.
Right. So you could kasher it that way. It's not always so practical. Uh-huh. That means you got to take the microwave for 50, you know, yeah, for 5 minutes as opposed to for that a minute. Then we say to double wrap. If you double wrap, so that would
is
be
double idea. Wrapping really required, or just like is if the concern is just Zaya coming, touching, and coming back in?
Like if it's really clean, so then you could say fine, but it's usually not, especially right, in the office. I mean, these offices, it becomes pretty right, nasty pretty quickly. So I would assume it's dirty.
It's like it's a pain to double wrap things with plastic.
Yeah,
it winds up melting into the food.
Ah, right. Well, that's why you need kosher saran wrap.
Right. Right. Okay.
Okay. So, right. Just on that line, there is a difference between kashering from milchiks to fleishiks and things like that versus kashering from treif to, right, so if you go into, so technically speaking, a, if it is treif, so then that would require a real agala, or if it's cooked on surface, even a real, even a real libun. So we would, and especially if it's a treif thing that got onto the wall, so then that would require libun gamur, right, a real burning. So that's why self-cleaning ovens are really the way to go. Libun gamur sometimes takes the place of hagala, right? So obviously you're not taking an oven and dunking that in hot boiling water, that's not going to work. But the libun, and so we assume what we call libun kal is heating up to, you know, as hot as it can go, that kind of thing. So libun kal is an issue if it's going from usser to mutter. That's why there are those that are machmir for Pesach to torch their ovens, as opposed to just turning it up as high as it can go. Or if you go to an Airbnb and it's not a self-cleaning oven, so to kasher it just by turning it up for a while, right? It's going to be that's a problem according to this shita. So the mekilim on that would argue back and say, yeah, but libun gamur is only really required because we don't really know how hot it ever went. But if you use an oven, so you know an oven never got above 500 degrees. You never got above, whatever the highest thing is, you never got above that. So because you know that it never got above that, so then you have the right to rely on libun kal. So that is a kula.
Well, that's telling me that I can rely on that during the year from treif, but not on Pesach.
He's more machmir for Pesach than he would be for treif.
For treif, yeah.
Okay. I mean, you could hear. You can make a svara either way on that.
If you want to view chametz as sirabella, then so is treif also as sirabella.
Right. But chametz has chumras of chumras on Pesach. On the other hand, the whole idea of considering chametz to be suri bala is itself a chiddush. I mean, that's probably not shitas rov rishonim. Mm-hmm. So that's why you can go either way. We've been going on for a while already. Let's just do a couple of odds and ends here. So number one, hilchos chala. So there is. Here in Hilchos Chalas, and in Shud Chaf Beis Sif Hei, so what do you do with the chala that you separated? So I'm not sure, ideally or Lamaisa, we burn it. Meaning in the Ramah, it talks about burning. I'm not sure there are any other great options in those days. So you burn it in order for it to not be edible, and then the minhag in the gross house is to pour some soap on it as well to make it unedible, and then we put it in the garbage. Because often when you just burn it, so it's burnt on the outside, but it's still good on the inside. So.
Even if you put it in the chametz, by kohelet, the big. I usually take them to like the.
Oh, you save your challah.
I put in the freezer.
Ah, okay. So the Ramad does say that you should get rid of your challah ASAP. But it could be that there weren't necessarily great marking systems. I mean, maybe nowadays that might be better. But yeah, no. If you're putting it there, then that's toast. I would be too concerned over there. But just in someone's house, especially in order, somewhat because of this issue we're about to discuss, minig in our house is my wife puts it in the burner rather than putting it in the oven. Uh-huh. Right. So therefore, it sort of often gets just crisp on the outside. It needs to be a little bit more on the inside. What?
The broiler, you mean?
No, the. She puts it in the fire, like on the burner.
Oh, on the stovetop.
Right, on the stovetop. So the Ramah here says, is an interesting language, which is a little bit misleading. So in Shin Chaf Beis Sif Hei, he says, right, our Mingus is taking his eyes, Va'ucha, no, there it is. Right, V'yeshom kashasorfim chala, osin la hesik bifnei atma, the Yisrael asr lihenas mimena. He says, when you burn the chala, you should make its own fire, because the Yisrael is not allowed to get hanah from it. It actually discusses in Shulchan Aruch that you can give it, that maybe even if it's going to be burnt, you should give it to a kohen, because the kohen will burn it, but the kohen is allowed to get hanah from the burning of it. So maybe there's still an inyan to give it to a kohen. So that is mentioned here. In my Monday night show, we'll get up to Hilchos Chala in the next couple of months, so we'll figure out exactly what that means then. But the Ramah says, anyways, you make its own fire, because a Yisrael is not allowed to get hanah from it. And the minhag is to put it in the oven before you are ofe the bread, before you open the pas. So you could read that as saying the same thing or disagreeing, meaning meaning it should have its own fire, and our minhag is to put in the oven before you burn before you put the bread in. Hopefully not to burn. Hopefully to bake. Right? So is that saying the same thing, or it's disagreeing?
Is this saying that Zaya from burning the...
So are we concerned about...
Is that
Hana? What?
Is it saying that that is Hana? How would that really...
No, it's not it? not sort of talking about the Zaya.
First, the Hana was maybe it was like fuel.
Right.
Oh, fuel.
Right. So to use it at the same time, we're concerned A, about the fuel, and B, perhaps we're concerned about the blios as well from the challah. Meaning, are we concerned about the blios that comes off the challah that stays in the oven? So really, what it seems to be saying is that it should have its own fire, meaning someplace else, in order to avoid the blios, in order to avoid the zeya and anything that comes from that. But our minug is that we're not so machmer. Our minug is certainly in chutzal aretz is to be mekel, and just we put in the oven, but just not at the same time as other things are there, in order to avoid this. So we try to be a little bit more machmer in that, in order to try to avoid the blios of it.
Would that apply to our ovens? Because our ovens, there's no real fire in our ovens. Like, could I put it... If I put challah in my oven,
right,
on the racks, isn't that gonna trip up my oven?
Is it or is it not? Are you
is it?
Well, we trip up your oven as much as the baked ziti will become fleishiks from the chicken before.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the same thing. But in order for it to burn off, you put it like down on something. I think what he's talking about is putting it down on the ground of the oven.
Okay.
Or whatever you're putting it down on, right, is going to have blios right there, right, and full-fledged blios, etc. So it sounds like we are makil, the minhag here of putting an oven beforehand, that is saying that we're going to be makil on that, but generally we try to be even machmer on that and wrap it before. So that is the practice of our challah separating restaurants here,
okay,
there and there, okay, right, is to, right, to take the challah and they wrap it in foil, and then also they don't put it in the pizza oven. Meaning, when you look at a pizza oven, there's usually four. Right, you look at a pizza oven, there's four things. So the top, the only two of those drawers actually go to ovens. The other two go to like control areas. So often they'll put in the control areas, and that's where they'll just leave it and let it burn. And that, in a way, is a separate oven, anyways. So therefore, we seem to be that's the general practice of these places.
Since I'm a Korean, I can do it l'chila because I get it. I can have enough on the hesek.
You can do it right if you. Yeah.
Even without being machmer, because I'm not to get enough from it.
Right, right. So you would have right. Okay, I'm a little hesitant figuring that out, but in a couple of months I'll keep that in mind when we learn this. Okay, and then one more, two more things. Number one is with regards to the issue of pas palter. So the so when it comes to ovens, for things that are pas Yisrael, so how much? So a Jew doesn't have to be involved with the entire process. You only have to be involved with part of the oven. So the Shulchan Aruch has this interesting halacha here in Kuf Yud Beis Sif Yud, where he says, "Im afu b'tanur al yedei ovi kochavim gimel pamim biyom echad v'ichshiru hatanur al yedei kisim b'veis pamim u'pam shlishis lo hichshiru mutter." That if the oven, if the guy makes three rounds of cooked items, of baked items over the course of the day, and you started the fire for two of them and not the third one, so Shulchan Aruch says the third one you could rely on. The third one's going to be mutter. What's going on there? So the assumption is that the heat of the first two is still continuing on into the third one.
So even if you do the last two, it's not going to
right. Talking about the first two, would then you'll be able to continue the heat going weiter. So this is an important klal that all of these halachos of bishul akum and pas palter and things like that. So if a Jew is involved in at least according to Ashkenazim, as long as a Jew is involved somewhat in the heating process, so it becomes so it is mutter, so long as it stays hot, so long as that the power of that first of the Jew's work is continuing on going forward. So how do you ensure that that is the case? So it stays hot. Right? If it stays hot, that means that the walls are hot, and that means that there's still heat coming from that fire. Now, how hot is hot? That is a very, very important question when it comes to these areas. So the Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach is quoted as giving a temperature of 176 degrees, which is I don't know. It's kind of hot, but also kind of not so hot. I mean, it's hot. It's not so hot when it comes to an oven, but it's kind of hot when you're starting from zero, right? So it is pretty significant heat. So in Giant, the way it works, Giant is all Pasi Sorel. So one of the jobs that Eliezer or the other Mashgichim have is to make sure that the oven is above that temperature. I mean, the oven is not being used all the time, but the temperature, and there is a sign on it saying, the workers know, and there's a sign on it saying that if the temperature goes below, and it's not 176, they say like 190, a little bit higher than that, if the temperature goes below this, you got to call Eliezer in order to turn the fire back on. Right? So one of their jobs is to go down every once in a while and check to make sure that the oven is staying above that temperature, which it does. It's supposed to stay above that temperature all the time, which is why even bread baked on Shabbos is technically Pasi Yisrael, right? It is coming from a fire that was started by a Jew. B'di'eved, it probably just means any amount of heat. So long as there is any amount of heat, even if it's below 176, so long as it's hotter than zero and it's coming from that original baking, so that is mutter. So I don't know if people rely on that l'chatchila. We would rely on it b'di'eved, meaning, so for instance, right before coming here tonight, I stopped by New York Bagel to set the timer for the oven for the next day. What happened, and someone does that every day, meaning after the fire goes out, the whole timer issue we'll save for another time, but we rely at least on timers saying that we need to, that two sets of timer, that is sufficient. What if you forget one night? So Rabbi Eisenman, I keep meaning to check myself, but Rabbi Eisenman told me that if it's, that the oven stays hot. I mean, if you go now and use a temperature gun and read the oven, it still is hotter than regular. It still is hotter than room temperature based on the heat from the day before. So therefore we would rely on that and say it's Pasi Yisrael b'di'eved. I'm not sure it's happened more than, you know, a handful of times, but even if I forget one night to turn the oven on for the next day, first of all, you could rely on anyways that it's, the timer is still continuing going anyways, and B, it's And B, it's still a little bit hot from earlier that day. The one exception would be Motzi Shabbos. The Motzi Shabbos, because A, it's been left for 48 hours as opposed to 24 hours, and the timer was pulled out, it actually needs to be started again. So there, Motzi Shabbos, when we have to make sure to be very careful to set the thing. And then one more issue, if you listen to the kashrus experts, the one example they use of, well, if you know how to run a kosher kitchen, doesn't mean you know anything about a commercial kitchen. So the one example that they always go to is convection ovens. What's so exciting about convection ovens? So commercial convection ovens, right? It's not just a heated oven. There's a fan there pushing heat around. Like that makes things more even, and that makes it go faster. So the problem is that if you would open a convection oven door while it's on, so you would be blasted with 400 degrees of heat. So therefore, they are set to, when you open the door, to turn off. Often, sometimes it's just the fan that turns off. Often it's the whole oven that turns off, meaning it's set to just go off at that moment. So then you have a problem, because if you open the door, so then you take everything out, and then when you close the door, so then everything turns on again. And then potentially you have a Bishul Akum issue if the guy is the one that is closing the door. So how do we get around that? So one way of getting around it is that Goyim just know they can't close the door. Right? That's one way of doing it. Not so practical in all of these situations, but that is one way of dealing with it. Another way is, well, how hot is it in that oven? Meaning, even if you open the door for a little while, so the walls are still going to remain relatively hot. So how long does that take? So you don't really know. But the general principle is, if you take it, the general policy is that you open the door for a minute, take something out, put something in, so a guy could do that himself. But once it's left open, and sometimes especially in these like hotel ovens where you open the oven and there's a whole speed rack in it with like, you know, 30 levels of things, so it could be open for a while, it could really become cooler, so there often the policy, and also we're more machmir with Bishul Akum than we are with Pas Akum, so there we would be more machmir and make sure that a Jew is the one that is, the Mashgiach is the one that is closing those ovens under those circumstances. I tell you that Rav Shechter is makel on this entire thing. So anyways, you have what to fall back on. As he says, the whole thing is only working because a Jew turns it on in the first place. So just because you're opening and closing it, it all still goes back to the Jew pushing the button to start the oven. So therefore, he feels one has the right to be makel, but I don't believe that's the OU policy anyways, meaning the OU is going to be machmir, and generally, at least l'chachila, we try to be machmir and make sure that is.
Based on what you're saying about the timer in the first case, where it's retaining the heat even from like 24 hours ago.
Right.
So if it's open even for an hour, doesn't it still retain the
heat?
Yeah,
you would think. Now some of these new ovens now, they're called the at Hasa Kosher, they have these what's they called? There's a specific name for them. These are like, you know, $50,000 ovens and stuff that they have, where it actually somewhat cools it. Like, there's all these processes that are going on inside. It will clean it sometimes. Like, it does all these other things. Mm-hmm. So I've never, like, tested it, because we want to have the policies. But it could be that they are actually being cooled as well, not just letting the heat dissipate. So it's just something you got to keep track of in these situations. All right?
Thank you.
Yasher koach, okay? And onward.
Okay. I guess the next set of shurim would be like Chol Yisrael.
Okay.
And we're also looking forward to the test.
Oh, so another on this, on the second half of Taruvus?
Yeah.
Okay.